This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Sweet Temptation by Wendy Higgins. Read for you by Christian Coulson. Prologue. I want to hate every part of you in me. You say that I'm privileged, but my gift is my curse. Bite my tongue by you, me at six.
Sit down, son.
Young Kaiden did as his father asked, obediently sitting in the oversized leather chair beside him in the sitting room of their London home. Kai's stomach buzzed with nervousness. He rarely had his father's full attention, so he felt heavy and exposed under his intense stare. Kaiden savored Farzuf's eyes on him, and for a moment let himself pretend this meeting was something more than business. He let himself imagine his father's smile was born of concern for him, rather than the glee of malice. He wanted to tap out a beat on his leg to soothe himself, but his father couldn't stand fidgeting of any kind, so he remained still. Farzuf looked over his young son, whose hair was longer than the other boys at school, and had unruly curls at the edges. Kai wore the same white shirt and navy trousers as his peers, but he still managed to stand out through his musical talents and the way he carried himself. The way he talked with blasé confidence and walked in an unhurried stride. All of this had been practiced and orchestrated by the handsome man sitting before him.
You're 11 now. Time to begin your training.
Kaiden nodded. He'd known this day was coming. He'd watched last year as his friends, the twins Mana and Ginger, faced their training. He'd been frightened by the bitterness that overtook Ginger and the sadness that seemed to drape Mana. They were no longer his mates in the carefree way of children. Even their eyes were different, calculating and searching.
You know you're the son of lust.
Yes, father.
Kai had been made to watch his father at work for some time now. He'd been given magazines and films to peruse long before he understood any of it.
Now tell me the sins we deal with as dukes and Nephilim.
Kaiden pushed the hair from his eyes and rattled off the seven deadly sins in a shaking voice.
Lust, greed, sloth and gluttony, murder, pride, wrath and envy. The other sins we promote are hatred, substance abuse, lies, theft, and adultery.
He placed his hands in his lap.
Don't sit like that, his father snapped. You look too proper. Put your hands on the arms of the chair like you own the place.
Kaiden quickly moved his hands to the arms of the chair.
Why do you suppose the sins are called deadly, aside from the obvious murder?
Kaiden swallowed hard. He didn't know how to answer, and he was afraid of being whacked across the head, just as he had been when his favorite nanny was sacked and his father caught him crying. Farzuf leaned forward, placing his elbows on his knees and twining his fingers.
Listen well, Kaiden, because this is the most important lesson of all. This is our purpose, the purpose of all demons and Nephilim. The sins are called deadly because they slowly kill one's spirit.
His blue eyes began to glisten with fervent zeal as he went on.
Over time, something as simple as casual sex or nicking items from a shop can soon become obsessions. Humans need more. They are stupid beings, Kaiden. They never have enough. More thrills, more attention. They're selfish creatures, never satisfied. And it's our job to help them on their journey to ruin. Do you understand?
Kaiden nodded. Disdain for humans had been ingrained in him from the beginning.
They were chosen by the Maker to live lives of freedom here on Earth, while angels such as myself were banished for wanting a simple bit more.
His father's eyes flashed red.
He chose them, this ungrateful race, to flaunt his blessings on while we were left to rot in hell, but we found a way to punish him.
Farzuf smiled wickedly.
Every day we turn his beloved earthlings against him. We cause them to focus on their bodies and their urges, their wants and desires. We give them something tangible to hold on to, but just for a moment, because the sins are fleeting satisfactions.
Kaiden nodded, shocked that the humans could be so easily fooled, so blind.
They deserve it if they're that stupid,
Kai said, and his father gave a laugh of pride.
Indeed, son. They deserve every moment of pain they get. The Maker tells them to be careful. He dangles a bit of fun in their faces, but tells them they cannot have it. But we are here to tell humans to take what they want. And when they have the nerve to cry over the consequences, to pout and curse the world, we laugh, because the Maker is hurting.
Why? Kaiden breathed. If they're all so horrible, why does it hurt him?
Farzef's eyes narrowed into a sneer.
Because he loves them. Because he's promised them free will, which means he will not interfere in their idiotic choices. It's pathetic.
Now Farzef chuckled.
He's backed himself into a corner and can only watch as his creation destroys itself with our help. And never forget, as much as he loves them, he loathes our kind. Never forget. His unworthy humans are all born with the chance at reaching the heavenly realm. You were not born with that chance.
Kaiden pressed his hands hard against the chair arms to keep from trembling. He hated when his father spoke of hell, that place of dimness where joy could not be had, the place he was destined to go when he died. At a knock on the house door, Farzef smiled.
Now you understand the why of our job. It's time to learn the how. Our helpers have arrived. Are you ready, Kaiden?
The young Neff could not speak. He could only nod. He'd spent the last year mentally preparing himself for this and wanted to make his father proud.
Very well, said his father. You're going to love your job, son. I dare say it's the best of the lot.
He leaned forward and grinned at Kaiden.
You've got all the makings of a superb Neff. You will be a powerful force. You will bring people to their knees with the desire they feel for you, and they will spend the rest of their lives wishing for another touch, searching for another man like you. But there is only one Kaiden Roe, and you will be like smoke. Make believe. They cannot hold you because there's no one like you who exists in their world.
Kaiden's heart pounded in the wake of his father's words. Then he heard several sets of footsteps coming down the hall toward their sitting room, toward him. He gripped the chair's arms tighter and set his face in a bored expression to hide the fear and excitement exploding through him like indecipherable lyrics. It was time to set himself apart from the other boys. There was no room in his life for guilt or humanistic morals. He was born for this. He was determined to embrace it and finally earn his father's approval, despite the sourness rising up in his throat. Farzef leaned back in his chair, lifting an ankle across his knee, staring darkly at Kaiden. A knock sounded on the sitting room door, and his father's lips rose in a wicked grin.
And now, son, the fun begins.
Part 1. Sweet Evil. Break Me by Kaiden Roe. I can see you, see you, see you, seeking me out. You can sense me, and it's freaking you out. I make you thirsty, hungry, but you can't stay away. Your eyes are on my body because you want it my way. Your mind and soul are screaming, saying run from the danger. You know that something ain't right, but you're a bee to my nectar. Your mind and soul are screaming, warning he's gonna break us. But your body is begging me to feed your emptiness. Chorus. I want those eyes to push me and those hands to pull me. Need those hips to break me, baby, break me, break me. It's gonna hurt tomorrow when you're sayonara. But for now, baby, break me, break me. You ignored all the signs from your heart and your mind. Now your body is spent, baby, broken, broken. You had a taste of the good life, sweet and salt from the high dive. Now your tongue is left craving, baby, craving, craving. You and me, we were doomed. Now you're licking your wounds. And I'm gone, baby, gone, on the winds of the dawn. Chorus. Chapter 1. Before. Like a big bad wolf, I'm born to be bad and bad to the bone. If you fall for me, I'm only gonna tear you apart. Break Your Heart by Tayo Cruz. I'm never gonna fall, but I'm never hard to catch. My heart will never break. I'm just here to break a sweat. Casual Sex by My Darkest Days. I'm the last of the band to walk into the party after our gig. I feel the eyes on me before I see them. The energy of auras blasting orange and red. Excited whispers of, oh my god, it's Kaiden Row, carried along sublime waves of music at high wattage. Guardian angels float above their charges, wary when they see me. I take my time entering the room behind our lead singer, Michael, who makes a grand entrance of throwing his arms up in the air as if to say, these are my people. Everyone cheers. Nobody seems to mind that he's a cheeky bastard. I've been in America less than a year this March, and not much has changed from when I lived in London. My life is still a blur of drums, sex and food, the kaifecta, the only thing worth living for in this fucked up world. My fingers are in the pockets of my black denim jeans and the front of my hair covers one of my eyes, but I can still see through the strands of brown. In one quick moment, I scan the room and find three girls from the gig with red-hot auras, eyes glued to me. In half a minute, I'm able to gather all I need from their auras, their body language, and the whispered conversations they're having, which I hear clearly with my Nephilim senses. I'm all over that. Heard he's amazing. Probably a jerk. He's way too hot. That last one is far more innocent than the others, and she's the one I choose. A cute brunette. I send her a nod. When she stares and slowly blushes, I look away. Then I turn and follow my mates into the kitchen for a drink. The first seed has been planted. She will pursue. In the kitchen, a girl with short blonde hair laughs at something some bloke is saying. He's the nice guy comedian type, wearing an oversized t-shirt. The moment I walk in, her attention wavers to me, and her happy yellow aura turns to a fog of surprise, a flame of orange excitement, and then an uprising of red. The bloke tries to get her attention back, but I friend-zoned him. Poor guy. I do feel bad for the ones who have to try so hard. If only they'd act like the sexual beings they are. Any bloke who seems not to think about sex all day and night is a right liar. Or he's attempting to train his mind for sainthood, which is idiotic. Trust me on this. When the blonde chick turns to grab her drink, sending a fluttery-eyed glance my direction, the seemingly nice guy ogles her ass, as he should, and his aura goes thick as red mud. When she turns to him again, he quickly retrains his face into the quirky smile. I know all the tricks. Don't bother with the polite, shy bit. It's not what most birds go for, though I have had to put on the witty good guy act to win over a few. I'm willing to play whatever role will put them in their comfort zone. Their ease leads to their nakedness. And nakedness is my comfort zone. It is what I seek. Something soft brushes against my arm and I look down to see the brunette from the other room sliding purposely against me as she edges through the crowd toward the drink counter. Our eyes meet and I give her a smile. She tucks her hair behind her ear and glances down before looking back up at me. Sorry, she says. I'm just... She points to the drinks on the other side of me. May I get you something? I ask. She stares for a moment, as if my voice and accent were unexpected. Her chest is pressed against my upper abs, and the crowd jostles us together. A cloud of red surrounds her, and I open my senses to let in the peachy scent of her pheromones. Right. That'll do. I'm ready to shag her. Thankfully, I'm a pro at this next bit. Getting someone into bed is an art, a dance. It's crucial not to misread her. Without asking, I whisk her cup from her hand and turn to make a fresh drink. In moments, I hand her a full glass, ice clinking. I hope rum and coke is all right. I already know it is because I smelled the remnants of her drink with my supernatural senses. Her eyes go wide.
That's what I was drinking.
Her smile is huge, as if this is a sign that I am her Mr. Right.
Brilliant. What's your name then?
Brittany, and you're Caden, right?
I smile. Nobody can seem to spell or pronounce my name. I'm used to this.
Close, love. It's Caden.
Oh, sorry.
She tries my name out the right way. Caden. Sounds lovely when you say it. Taking her by the elbow, I gently lead her away from the crowded kitchen.
Were you at the show?
She was. I saw her.
Yes. Oh my God, it was so good. You guys rock.
Oh, thanks.
Mind if we go out back? It's hard to hear you.
I'm already opening the back door and she gladly exits. Her aura pushes outward when I touch her waist and lead her away from the smokers outside. We find a wooden bench swing to sit on. It's dark out and the light from the back porch is now dim. We glide back and forth. Her aura is jittery and I need to relax her.
Are you in school?
I ask, though I don't care.
Yeah, it's my first year at Georgia Tech. You?
I shake my head. No college for me. I'm going to be what they call a senior in high school, but she doesn't need to know that bit.
Not to be rude, but you're nicer than I thought you'd be, she says.
Most good-looking guys are
pricks,
I supply. She nods and takes another drink. Her aura is a nervous grey as she asks,
do you, have a girlfriend?
Bingo.
No, I say sadly. I'm not the settling down type.
This shouldn't make her happy, but it does. I see it in the way she bites her lip against a smile. Her aura is excited.
I think everyone's the settling down type eventually. You just have to find the right person.
Gotta love delusional romantics. I'll never settle down, Brittany. It's the truth, but I say it like an unfortunate mantra.
You never know,
she whispers, angling toward me. She wants to be the one who settles me. They all do. I've been honest with her, just as I am with all of them. I can't help it if she wants to fool herself. I turn my head, catching a glint of the night stars in her eyes.
What do you want from life, Caden?
She asks. I want to stay alive. I take the drink from her hand and set it down.
All I want right now, Brittany, is you.
Today is my birthday, and I'm prepared to use that fact as a wild card, but it's not necessary. She is mush. Her aura is on spin cycle. I slide one hand around her waist and pull her hip to mine. I ignore her guardian angel who's gone frantic above her. She lets out a whimpering breath, and I kiss her. She molds to me, ripe to my touch. Things escalate more quickly than I expected. I thought I'd have to be the initiator, but her hands are all over me. She's clearly ignoring her guardian angel's whispers to run, run as fast as she can. Most people aren't in tune with their angels, and that works to my advantage. Her hands are everywhere.
God, Brittany, I need you.
Her chest heaves as she takes in air.
Where can we go?
Hell yes. I look up to the house and focus my hearing on the upstairs bedrooms. All occupied. Shite. Then I catch a conversation in the dining room.
I can't find her. Derek says he saw her go off with the drummer. He said that guy is bad news.
Oh, freaking great. Just what we need. She finally breaks up with douchebag and now she's going to get her heart broken by Mr. One Night Stand.
Fantastic. The vigilante friend patrol. And they know their little Brittany well. They'll be out here any moment.
I know it's not ideal, but we can go to my car if you'd like.
She nods. I take her hand and we walk quickly around the side of the house. I've parked my SUV away from everyone else. You never know when you'll need a bit of privacy. I click the button to unlock the doors, help her into the massive back seat, and step in behind her. We pick right up where we left off. Soon we are both in our comfort zones, naked. She suddenly hesitates. This is when most blokes bung it up. Many girls experience a moment of moral hesitancy when their blasted angel's whispers faintly break through, causing them to face the reality that they just met me, and this might not be the best idea.
"I've only been with one guy," she tells me, breathing hard. "We were together a long time. I don't usually, you know, this is not like me."
Most fellows push, pressure, guilt, whatever. But this is where I'm golden. I nod as if I respect what she's divulged.
"We don't have to, Brittany," I say, as I begin nuzzling against her, giving her a preview of my strong hips, my ability to move them.
"We can stop." I begin to pull away.
"No."
She nearly panics, clutching me close.
"Don't stop. I need you to know."
"I understand," I whisper against her lips.
"You're a good girl."
She kisses me with renewed passion as if I've seen into her soul and understand her like no one else. And so I keep going, and I make it worth her while. I give her plenty to tell her friends tomorrow, though it will likely be followed up days later with tears when she realizes I'm never going to call, that I won't acknowledge her when she shows at my next gig, because she's not the one. I tried to warn her. The one does not exist for Kaiden Row. Only the right now. Only feeding the urges. Only my survival matters. I'm surprised to see a limo in the driveway when I return home. I thought Father was staying in New York for work. Being the vice president of Pristine Publications means non-stop parties with models, actors, and various supporters of the rich and famous porn industry. I wonder for the millionth time why he chose to live in Atlanta rather than New York City. And then with a twist of my gut, I'm reminded. Madame Marissa. I hear her nauseating, lazy laughter when I push my hearing into the house. I want to turn my car around, but I know Father has heard me by now. He's always listening. He's the one who taught me to be constantly on the lookout. He's the one who taught me everything I know. He's the Duke of Lust, known to demons as Farzuff, known to humans as Richard Rowe. And he chose to make his home near the most sinister human bitch that ever lived, leader of the largest sex trafficking ring in the southern states. The two of them go way back, having met in the UK. Father even brought her and several of her older girls over to help with my carnal training when I first turned 11. I've never hated someone as much as I hate Marissa. I grit my teeth and take my sweet-ass time getting out and trudging in through the giant doors. I want to go straight down to my room in the basement, but I'd be smacked in the skull for slighting our guest. So I paste a polite expression on my face and enter the heated sun porch beside the indoor pool. The room is as lush with plants as a damn jungle and smells like chlorine and tropical flowers. There are plenty of lounging chairs, but Marissa is sat on Father's lap. Her guardian angel looks resolute, if not a bit worn, beside her. I actually feel bad for the spirit, especially since a peevish demon whisperer is circling it like a giant gnat. Marissa's black hair reaches her hips, and her giant breasts are about to tumble out of her black scoop-neck dress, a sight that does nothing for me. Blood-red lips match her creepily long nails, and she gasps when she sees me.
"Look at him, Richie! He looks more like you every time I see him!"
Father nods, looking me over and tipping his nose up, probably to check the air around me, to be sure I'd done my job for the night. His sense of smell is astounding. I nod back.
"Father, Marissa, I hope you're well."
"It's only 2 in the morning, Father says. "Early night for you. How many did you get?"
"Damn it." "1, I admit. I would have stayed out if I'd known they'd be here.
"Not much of a birthday celebration," Marissa says.
Of course she would remember my special day. Father looks from her to me.
"Is it March 31st already?
Marissa laughs and swats his shoulder before looking at me again.
17 looks nice on you, and you'll only get better as you age.
I choose to ignore this. "Mates threw me a party last night since we had a gig tonight," I lie. Marissa stands and saunters toward me on high heels. She's in her late 30s. She's pale as porcelain. Avoiding the sun has been good for her skin. If she weren't so evil, I'd think she was hot. She comes too close and looks up at me with a pout. I know what she wants. She fancies a kiss, which I never voluntarily give to her. I lean down to quickly peck her cheek, but she grabs the back of my neck with viper claws and takes my mouth with a satisfied sound. No tongue, thank God, but she takes my bottom lip between hers and suckles it. I'm certain her lipstick is all over me now. Father chuckles at the ridiculous display, as if Marissa is an auntie pinching my cheeks, not molesting my mouth.
"Madam has a job for you, son,"
he says from his lounging position. This causes Marissa to release my lip and turn for her purse. I take the opportunity to wipe my lips with the back of my hand and school my face to hide the revulsion I feel.
"I've a new niece coming from Hungary in a couple months."
Marissa has taken a photo from her purse and she crosses her arms while she explains the fate of a girl who was either stolen from or sold by her desperate family.
"A valued client has requested a virgin, so she is to stay innocent."
She hands me the picture and I blink several times, rocking back on my heels. The girl can't be older than 11. She hasn't even begun developing. She's frail and tiny with stringy blonde hair and big doe eyes. Father watches me with expectancy, and Marissa clicks her long nails together, a familiar sound that follows me into nightmares. For the first time ever, my disgust overrides my fear.
"She's a bloody child,"
I spout without thinking. Father sits up, his forehead pinching at my minor outburst. Marissa snatches the picture back, but her eyes are amused.
"She's old enough."
Father stands and walks over now, taking the picture.
"She's not that young, and her age is not your concern."
I hear the edge of warning in his voice, a sound that feels like shards of ice. He'd kill me in a second, I have no doubt of that.
"We're not asking you to have sex with her," Marissa croons. "We just don't want her too terrified when her new owner touches her. Some buyers like that, but not this one."
Ugh, I don't want to touch her at all. When it comes to girls my age and older women, I'm down for anything, but this is disgusting. Father deals with lust of all kinds. He's into the sickest shit out there, but I cannot, I will not, physically force myself to be attracted to a child.
"Looks like your boy's more plain vanilla than you thought," Marissa mutters.
"He'll be fine when the girl arrives, love," Father assures her, eyeing me. "He'll do what needs to be done."
Fuck, will I? I think of the little girl's face again and my stomach cramps. No, I won't. This is not good. I've crossed a lot of lines in my life to make Father happy and prove my worth, but this is different. Maybe the picture is old. I can only hope, because I don't want to find out what consequences he has in store if I lose my usefulness to the demonic cause. I should have known breaking hearts wouldn't be enough.
"Yes," Devil Woman runs her nails down my arm. "He always does what needs to be done."
Chapter 2. Strange Girl. My devil loves your angel, you can't take that away. See if she'll take her halo off, if only for today. Devil's Love Song by Tisha Mingo. I'm still pissed off when I get to the club. When we parted this evening, Father's face was tight as he reminded me it's now May and the child will be arriving soon. In the 2 months since I turned 17 and showed defiance about the young girl, Father has been pushing me, testing me. Nothing is good enough. We stand backstage and Raj is adding more gel to his faux hawk, staring in the mirror and pinching the tips of his hair. His eyes are bloodshot from the spliff he just smoked.
"What's wrong with you?"
he asks. I shake my head and look away. I can't exactly tell him my father's a demon, that he expects me to do horrible things. No humans know what I really am. I'm still trying to scrub the image of the enslaved girl from my mind as we take the stage. It does me no good to think about her, all the hundreds of others like her who I've hurt already. Don't feel, don't think, Don't acknowledge it's real, just go through the motions like always. I slide onto my stool and twirl the drumsticks, savouring the familiar feel of the cool, smooth wood between my fingers. Deep breaths. Time to clear my head in the only way I know how. Sitting behind the drums, I am myself, the real me. Even during sex, I cannot completely let go. I'm hyper-aware. Music is the only way. I look out at the packed house, girls screaming, jumping up and down in front of the stage, loads of skin on show. This I can do. Starting with feather taps and working my way across the set, I rip a line of beats to warm up. Immediately, the energy in the room changes, heightens. Conversations hush and heads turn toward the stage, then voices buzz back to life louder than before. A wicked beat can change the entire atmosphere in a room. Michael, feeling it too, shoots me a grin before checking his chords and mic. I feel eyes on me, heating my blood. Yeah, a good beat is sexy. Makes people want to move their bodies, their hips. Plain vanilla, my arse. Damn it, I have to stop thinking about that. Michael throws his strap over his shoulder, electric guitar slung low. He picks off a few notes, eyeing Raj on bass, until they both nod, satisfied with the sync. When we're set, Michael motions the DJ, who tells the room to give it up for Lascivious, and they do, nice and loud. I purposely don't eye the energized crowd as Michael takes to the mic with the welcome. I have to focus, can't be distracted by all the chicks and their curves. Michael gives me the go with a flick of his chin, and I raise the sticks above my head to count us in. 1, 2, 3, 4, bam! First song is high energy, throwing me into a chop out and ending with muscle burn. All the shit in my life disappears, and there's only the creation of beats. Beats that vibrate from soul to soul across the room, bringing flesh to life, every cell thumping in a rhythm they can barely contain. We're on fire. I imagine joy is something akin to this. Just letting go. My forehead is already damp by the end of the first song. I push my hair aside and get set for the second song, which begins slower. When the room settles, I start on the warm cymbal, a shushing build-up to a quiet beat. Michael always makes it to second base with the microphone when he sings this ballad bit. And then the real fun begins. Dramatic silent pause and stillness, followed by a roar, all-out punishment of the drums, screamed lyrics, and a high decibel refrain loud enough to rip the rafters from the roof. This is the zone. The place where I can truly breathe. My body takes over, and hit after hit falls just right until the crash of the cymbals. I whirl the drumsticks over my head with a flourish, then tuck them under my arm. Damn, what a rush. I feel good, focused, until my stupid hair catches in my eyes and I can't blink it away. I swat it aside. We have a minute before the next song while Michael bullshits with the fans a bit, keeping them worked up. Two girls in front shout my name. Mother Nature has blessed them both with perfect tits, and they, in turn, bless us all by wearing tiny shirts. Such kindness deserves a grin. Maybe they'll make it backstage later. I shift on the stool as I imagine it. Ah, stay focused. The third song begins. Raj picks the tune on his bass line, and then I come in strong, willing myself to get lost in the intricate details. When it ends, I quiet the tinging cymbals between my fingers. With a tilt of my head, I flick the hair from my eyes and grab my water bottle from the floor. I scan the crowd, attempting not to check out the gorgeous cleavage display for the time being, hoping to avoid the faces of a few girls who've been stalking me. But my scanning skids to a halt at the sight of a fresh-faced blonde staring right at me. She's a complete doll, with a wild mane of long hair and a spicy red aura. But the bit I notice next sends an iced razor down my spine. Bloody hell. Is that a badge on her chest? I stare in disbelief at the small, round, supernatural burst of light emanating from the core of her torso. It isn't black like most badges. It's a dark yellow swirled with white. I'm suddenly stiff and on guard, imagining the knife in the ankle of my left boot. I search around the strange girl looking for a possible guardian angel. But she has none. Shit, a bloody fucking Neff is at my gig. Sent by my father, no doubt.
Shit!
I try to swallow but can't, so I force down a few gulps of water. For half a moment I forget where the fuck I am. Then Michael is giving me the go for the next song. I drop the bottle to the floor and pull the sticks from under my arm. I've lost all focus. I don't know how I stay on beat. I glance over to keep an eye on the Neff, but she's gone, pushing her way through the crowd. What is she up to? It takes every ounce of self-control not to abandon the band and follow her. She goes into the loo, but it's likely a ruse. I thought I knew every Neff close to my age, but I've never seen her. I'd remember that face, that hair. I silently curse the song for being so long, but at least it's our last before the next band comes on. I shove my auditory senses over the massive crowd and straight into the girls' loo. I listen, trying to make sense of the silly conversation while thrashing out the backbone of the song.
I heard that guy Kaiden has gonorrhea.
I miss a beat, and my bandmates shoot me questioning glares. I can't remember the last time I've dicked up a song, but I'm too concentrated on the bathroom drama.
Gonorrhea?
Clearly the Neff is trying to keep the other girls from coming backstage to meet me. Fewer obstacles in her way as she attempts to find me and... do what? Kill me? Test me somehow for Father and the other Dukes? And now what is she going on about? She's taking back what she'd said about me and apologising. What the... This doesn't make a bit of sense. Finally, the blasted song is wrapping up and I can put an end to this rubbish. The blonde Neff heads back into the club just as we're rushed off the platform. I keep my hearing tight around the girl as I walk backstage. She meets up with some guy called Jay. Their conversation sounds ordinary. She's a good actress, but she can't fool me. Anna. He calls her Anna. Jay is taking Anna backstage. Perfect. I feel the weight of my knife in my boot as Michael, Raj and Bennett high-five down the hall and bump shoulders next to me. Time to play, little Neff. Oh, cripe. Three local models are waiting for me backstage. I forgot I'd invited them. My mind is too preoccupied to fully appreciate the females encircling me as I sense the Anna girl walking in with two human boys. The girl next to me lifts a cigarette. I have a matchbook out of my pocket and lit before she can reach for her lighter, a pub talent I perfected at age 14 after seeing my father do it. But I can't pretend to be more interested in the girls. I'm too distracted by Anna as I watch her human boys leave her there, looking out of place and uncomfortable in her own skin. And her aura. Her emotions are on display all around her. Why the hell is she letting them show like that? Some sort of trick to confuse me, no doubt. Can you trick your body into displaying false emotions? The models chat me up and I reply absently, but I can't for the life of me take my eyes off Anna. And then she raises her eyes to mine, giving my pulse a punch. Her aura goes berserk, and she drops her eyes abruptly, as if shy. As if. Does she think I'm a fool? She looks back up, and I swear she appears terrified, which irks the hell out of me. She thinks she can play me. Balls to the wall. Time for confrontation. A slender hand grabs my arm and calls my name in a whine. I raise an index finger and excuse myself. The Neff's eyes dart all around as I approach, which only makes me stare harder. What is the point of this frightened, innocent act? I don't know what she's playing at, but she's about to lose. Finally, she holds my eyes, locked.
Who are you?
I ask. Her mouth pops open.
I'm Anna?
Trying to be cute, eh? Not buying it, but damn, she is cute. 15, maybe 16. Legs and arms are a bit too thin in the denim skirt and tank top, but she'll fill out as she gets older, no doubt. Her long, honeyed hair falls smoothly to her waist, and her face has lovely symmetry. Brown eyes that tip slightly downward at the corners, small nose, rosebud lips. The wholesome, all-natural look is quite brilliant if she's trying to put me at ease, but I'm not buying it.
Right, Anna.
How very nice. I lean closer.
But who are you?
I just came with my friend Jay. She begins to babble and fidget as I stare at her nervous aura and that amber and white swirl badge at her lower chest. I've never seen a duke with an amber badge, and white is unheard of, the light of angels. Anna crosses her arms where I'm staring and I look up. Her lips are pursed like she's offended, and she has the loveliest beauty mark at the top edge of her lips. God, I want to touch it, to kiss her mouth and lick that dark freckle. Naturally, that thought leads to imagining her naked, silky hair falling all around her. She wouldn't be able to keep up the innocent act in bed with me. I'd have her true vixen side showing in no time. Hey, asshole, she's likely here to gather intel that could lead to your death, I remind myself, clearing my head and shifting before my body has a chance to take over. I have a firm no-nef rule. This girl is strange, no doubt, but I can't help getting closer. If she's pretending to be human, I want to see how far she'll take this impromptu act.
Where's your angel? I ask.
If you mean Jay, he's over there talking to some man in a suit, but he's not my boyfriend or my angel or whatever. She seems genuinely flustered. If this is all a charade, why are her colours jumping around like that? Light grey, medium grey, fuzzy, sharp, and yeah, boy, a nice swirl of red. She wants me, but I can tell she's not happy about it. Completely baffling. Why doesn't she just show her hand? Tell me what she wants. Why play this game when she knows I can see she's a nef? I've even seen her gazing at my badge. I step back as a thought occurs that freaks me the fuck out. What if she doesn't know what she is? What we are? No, that isn't possible. Perhaps back in the day when dukes had countless offspring, there could have been unaccounted for nef orphans. Everything is tightly regulated since the Great Purge a century ago, when the dukes wiped every nef from the face of the earth. Thousands of us were killed because our numbers overwhelmed our demon fathers. Apparently the nef were growing out of control, not being careful with their powers, and even sliding under the radar when it came to working. Now there are only 100-something nef children, and the dukes were careful not to overpopulate again. Someone has to know about this girl. Perhaps she's been kept hidden from other nef, to be used as a secret weapon against us, to confuse the hell out of us, and then go for the kill. I wonder how far she's willing to take this before she fesses up. I glance over at the humans she came with. Not your boyfriend, eh? At this she appears angry. Are you certain he doesn't fancy you? I grin, and she juts out her chin, standing a little taller, which isn't very tall at all. Yes, I am. How'd you know? I ask. She seems to ponder this question before spouting smartly. I just know, okay? Her arms are still firmly crossed over her chest. I lift my hands and laugh in the face of her adorable show of sassiness. Perhaps I'm having a bit too much fun with this whole thing, but I can't help myself. It's just so ridiculous. I'm determined to out her by any means. Intimidation hasn't worked, so it's time to turn on the charm. I'm terribly sorry, Anna. I've forgotten my manners. I thought you were someone else. I stick out my hand. I'm Kaiden Rowe. She pulls a hand away from her side and takes mine. Hers is soft and cool and seems right at home in mine, which is an idiotic thing to think. This little nef is having bizarre effects on me. I stare into her eyes, wondering how she can hide her deceit so well. I'm about to pull my hand away when hers suddenly warms, and she full out blushes. I'm fucking believable. How did she get herself to do that? I've never seen a nef blush in my life. Her aura is going mad again, lust winning out as the dominant colour. And just to be sure she isn't simply an expert at mind games, I open my sense of smell and let it surround her. Oh, damn. Definitely giving off pheromones. She smells divine, like a fresh pear, and some dainty flower I can't put a name to. That's going to bug me. Right. I chuckle at the craziness of it all and slowly take my hand back. I'm about to tuck my sense of smell away when I get an idea. One more test to see if I can get her to admit to being nef. I search down the street, bypassing foul city scents, until I find what I'm looking for. Ah, smells good. There's nothing like American hot dogs. I think I'll have one later. She looks at me like I'm crazy and says, I don't smell anything.
Really? Lean toward the door some. Breathe a bit deeper.
I can tell she knows what I mean. Her face tightens in concentration, and her little nose slightly flares until I know she smelled it. 1 mile away. I wait for her to try to deny it, but she only shakes her head and blinks at me. Yeah, that's right. I can do what you can do, so let's cut the shite, shall we?
I suppose I was mistaken then, I say with a healthy dose of sarcasm.
This has gone on long enough. I need to get some answers out of the public eye. One of the abandoned models takes this inopportune moment to approach, stepping between us. I whisper what she wants to hear, that I'll be over in a moment to take them home, and then we'll have all night. She walks away satisfied while I feel anything but. I can't get out of work to chase this Neff girl, especially if I'm under some sort of surveillance. But I will find her. Her human friends are over there giving their information to our road manager. I'll find out where they live, what school they attend, what parties are happening in their area. I have resources, and people give out a plethora of information on their social media accounts.
Maybe I'll see you around, Anna. I'll be sure to give your boyfriend Jay's songs a listen.
As I turn to walk away, I hear her say, he's not my... But I don't stop to listen. My beautiful dates are waiting none too patiently. I listen from across the room as the bloke Jay goes back to her, inquiring about me. I almost spit my bourbon through my nose when he says, man, y'all look like you were going to rip each other's clothes off. And she hits him. Instead, I make eye contact with Anna one last time and wink at her. Damned if she doesn't blush again before turning quickly to leave. She deserves an Oscar, that girl. I try to give the models my full attention, but all I can think about is Anna. I listen to her conversation as they drive away. She's just about to ring someone named Patty when they exit my range of hearing. Freesia, I say aloud when the name of the flower finally comes to me. She'd smelled of pears and freesia. The models give one another funny looks and giggle. I shake my head. Sorry. Don't mind me. They laugh now and I grin, feeling like an idiot. An unfamiliar feeling for me. Intrigue like I've never experienced floods me, and I don't like it. Everything about her screamed of innocence, but that's impossible. Her sudden appearance in my life will drive me to distraction, something I cannot afford. Still, I know I will replay our meeting for days. The images, her all-natural appearance, her open expressions and colours, and her seemingly authentic friendship with a human boy. Either this Neff has some twisted, ingenious plan to entrap me, or she truly doesn't know what she is. If that's the case, it means serious danger for her. Not that I should care, not that I do care. I'm intrigued, is all. Enough to know that I won't rest until I find out more about this mysterious Anna. Chapter 3. More confused than ever. Burning mud in my eyes, blinding me from the truth. Long Way Down by Robert DeLong. I'll admit, I've been stalking the hell out of the bloke called Jay. I cannot find a trace of Anna online, other than a list of choir award recipients from 2 years ago. But Jay has accounts on damn near every social media site available. Today he posted, raise your hand if I'll see you shaking your stuff at Jean's party tonight. That started a quick strand of comments. I'm so going, gonna be tight. I've heard his lake house is awesome. Everyone's invited. Anyone know the address? Bingo. Someone posts the address and I lock it into my mobile. That night, with my bandmate Raj at my side, we roll up to the house on Lake Alatoona with nearly every other high schooler in the Atlanta area. Raj immediately heads down the stairs toward the smell of marijuana. I search the party with my hearing and find Jay. He's loud and surrounded by laughing girls, but there's no sign of Anna. As I walk into the kitchen and glance out the window, I see why. She's outside, talking with a bloke. Hey. I look in the direction of the husky, sexy voice and see the speaker next to me. She's got a drink in one hand, her other elbow leaning back against the counter. She's a rocker girl with a streak of pink in her hair and plump, hot pink lips. She's wearing all black in fishnets and boots. She looks fun.
Hey yourself, I say. I glance out the window again. Anna and the kid appear to be stargazing or something. Her aura is blasting a nervous grey with orange bursts of excitement. So strange. Rocker girl doesn't smile. Her aura is fuzzy, so she's either been drinking a good bit or smoking downstairs. But she doesn't wobble or show any signs of being impaired except for her heavy-lidded eyes draped in silvery grey liner.
Never seen you before, she says. I'd remember.
She reaches up a hand with chunky rings and flicks the hair above my eye.
I like your hair.
I look at her neon pink streak, a stark contrast to the black locks around it.
I like yours more.
She keeps a straight face, too cool to smile, but her eyes momentarily glint. She reaches up again and this time runs her fingers along the side of my hair before scratching behind my ear. I want to wag my tail for her, but I'm too distracted. I glance out the window again and she drops her hand.
That chick is weird, Rocker Girl says.
She's looking out at Anna now too and she sips her drink.
How so?
I ask. She shrugs.
I mean, she's nice, I guess, just kind of freaky. She stares a lot, doesn't talk much.
Interesting.
You're in school together?
Yeah, for like ever. Anyway.
Raj bursts through the crowd. Yo, Kai, got us some goods.
He holds up his hand with some pills and bumps Rocker Girl's arm.
Hey, watch it, she says, holding up her drink and wet hand.
Sorry. He looks her over. Damn, you're hot.
Without looking away from her, Raj thrusts a pill my way, probably X, and I slip it into my pocket.
What's your name? Raj asks her.
Mandy.
Cute name. I'm Raj, base for lascivious.
She appears unimpressed, but I can see the swirl of orangish-red attraction and excitement in her aura.
That's a band, right? Yeah, I've heard of you guys.
Rocker Girl takes in his black faux hawk and the myriad of piercings on Raj's face and ears. She bites her black thumbnail between her teeth as if considering him. Again, her eyes are alight, but she won't crack a smile. Raj looks at me with his eyebrows raised, asking permission. I nod and turn back to the window. Anna and the bloke are gone. Shite, I mutter. I lean forward to see more of the back deck, but other people are spilling outside now and I don't see her anymore. I leave Raj and Rocker Girl, and Raj's laughter follows me as I push through the crowd. I stop and lean back against the entrance of the main hall when I catch sight of Anna's long, honeyed hair heading down the basement stairs. I won't lose her again. I bubble my hearing around her and I spot the guy she was with standing at the kitchen island. Several things happen in the next few minutes that I cannot make heads or tails of. Anna seems genuinely freaked out by the drug use downstairs and she hurries back up. The kid she's with slips a powdered ecstasy tablet into her drink. When he gives it to her, she downs it as he watches in smug enthusiasm. She has to know the drink was drugged. Any neff would have been listening to their date and gathered that much. But she allows him to think she's clueless. When she and her mates walk my way, heading towards the dance room, I think about hiding, but part of me hopes she sees me. Her friend catches me staring, but I pay her no mind. Anna's eyes are glazed and her colours have faded to a thin, blotchy mist of confusion. I resist the urge to grab her by the arm and pull her from the party. She's only working, I tell myself. I've been blitzed out of my mind countless times while working, so why doesn't this feel okay? I glance into the dancing room where the music is blaring. It's dark enough in there to need my night vision, my pupils expand, and I take in the sight of Anna dancing. She's willowy and graceful, and most definitely high. I can't stop watching her. They walk past me again on their way back, and once again Anna does not look my way. Clearly the Neff girl is ignoring me. Her focus is unnerving. The kitchen is too bright for me to remain hidden, so I stand around the corner and listen. When Jay finds Anna, he is not pleased to find she's not sober.
Are you drunk? What the hell, Anna?
Jay, please don't be mad at me.
He's been trying to score with a different girl all night, so I don't think this is romantic anger he's feeling. It's a friendship thing. I don't get it. And then her date comes back, his aura a mix of purple pride and red lust. Everyone laughs at everything he says and looks at him like he's a demigod. Mr. Popular, no doubt. I want to take him outside and dunk his head into the lake a few seconds too long. I watch as he takes Anna by the hand and leads her down the hall, past the dance room, up the stairs. I stand at the bottom of the stairs using my extended hearing to drown out the high volume of music and voices surrounding me. The bloke takes Anna into a room and closes them in. It sounds as if they're climbing onto the bed. My heart is beating faster than normal, and there's a sour feeling when I swallow. I don't feel right. This night doesn't feel right. Anna let herself be drugged and taken to a room. Perhaps that's how she works, pretending to be the innocent victim and allowing dodgy gits to believe they're taking advantage of her. So why are my instincts screaming at me to go up there and intercept her? I stand at the bottom of the stairs, leaning against the railing and pretending to look at my mobile. I feel girls looking my way, brushing purposely against me as they pass, but I ignore them and focus on the conversation in the upstairs bedroom. Everything feels so soft, Anna is saying in a dreamlike voice.
When I'm on E, Creeper says, I always think everyone should be naked, just like Adam and Eve.
A burst of laughter escapes me. Did he just use a biblical reference to get laid? That was the absolute worst line in history. But Anna gives a breathy laugh and says, just completely natural and happy. I roll my eyes. I've been high on ecstasy and I know how sensitive your skin feels, but she sounds like Snow White or something. I wish she'd stop humouring little dopey. I'm getting impatient.
You know, Anna, creepy dopey says. His voice has taken on a false silky quality. It wouldn't take much for you to be more, I don't know, popular or whatever. I mean, you're pretty, but you could be, like, hot, you know?
Damn. Burn. Is he serious? She sounds inexplicably sweet, not offended, when she responds,
I'm sorry, Scott, but even if I had the money, I just don't care about those things. I want people to like me for who I am. Isn't that what you want, too?
I'm halfway up the stairs before I realize it. Things are not adding up. This plonker's words, plus what Rocker Girl said, and Anna's friendship with Jay. What Neff chooses the unpopular role? Especially when they're as gorgeous as she is.
Have you kissed many guys?
Creepy Dopey is asking. I'm at the top of the stairs now, heart slam dancing against my ribs. I don't feel right.
I've never kissed anyone, Anna says.
I nearly snort with laughter at the lie, as sincere as she may sound. There's no possible way she's never been kissed.
Not even Jay?
He asks.
No way, he's like my brother.
I found the door and I'm standing in front of it.
How long will this last? Anna whispers, this feeling.
About 4 hours, then it takes a couple of hours to come down.
She makes a sad sound at his answer and he says,
Anna?
Huh?
I want to be your first kiss.
I grip my teeth and grip the door handle.
Okay, she whispers.
First kiss or 50th, doesn't matter. This guy is not getting any satisfaction under my watch. I wrench the handle down and kick the door open. They bolt upright on the bed.
What the?
Creepy begins, shielding his face from the hall light, but I'm only looking at Anna, feeling a strange sense of relief. She squints at me.
Oh, there you are, love. Let's go then.
I motion her toward me with a flick of two fingers. She stares, mouth open.
Can you walk, or will I have to carry you? I ask.
The guy finally sprouts a tiny pair of balls.
What are you doing, man?
I need a chat with Anna.
I'm watching her. She sort of smiles, dazed, then slides off the bed to stand.
I'll be back, she says to him.
Like hell she will.
I wouldn't count on it, actually.
I enter the room and take her by the hand. We leave the bloke sputtering and red-faced with anger. He shouts at me, and I give him one hard-ass glance to shut him up before I slam the door behind us. I hold her hand and lead her down the hall, down the stairs, through the party, onto the back deck, and down the steps leading to the dock and the water.
I'm confused. I don't enjoy being confused. I pull her faster down the dock where we can be alone. But when we get to the edge of the dock, I'm at a loss. I sit and she carefully sits next to me. I can feel her eyes browsing me and I let her. I stare out at the moon's reflection on the water. I've never met a Neff who doesn't act like one. She doesn't hide her colours. She's kind to people even when they're deceptive to her and there seems to be nothing in it for her. She appears to have a true friendship with a human, Jay. She says and does things that no Neff would dare say or do, and then there's the part about her having no money, which can't be true. Either she doesn't know what she is, or she's got the most twisted and ingenious working profile I've ever seen. To have two completely opposing possibilities is mind-bending. A breeze blows across the water, and Anna shivers. "Who are you?" I ask, just as I did when we first met. She pauses. I don't know how you want me to answer that. It's almost like she feels bad about this. Then very suddenly she gasps violently and her hands curl around the edge of the dock. What is it? I ask. I think it feels like it's starting to wear off, but he said 4 hours. She stands on shaking legs and begins to pace, hugging herself around the middle and hunching over. It takes me a moment to realize she's talking about the drug. She's coming down from the high, but she seemed almost panicked about it. I stand and block her exit down the dock so she can't run. I need her to focus on me. Perhaps she'll be more open while she's still high. I grasp her chin and lift her eyes to mine. We'll start with Neff basics. We never get ill. Have you ever been sick? I ask. She holds herself tighter. Sick? The flu, tonsillitis, anything. Her eyes grow larger and for that second she stands a bit straighter as she stares at me. Then her body spasms and she bends at the waist, grabbing her knees. It seems as if she's in true pain, but if it's an act, I will not play the fool. Maybe this little sweep will help you. I hold up the pill Raj gave me and Anna swipes for it, fast as a damn cheetah, but I'm quicker. Her eyes are flashing and eager with need. Answer all of my questions first. Any illnesses in your lifetime? No, she stammers. Good, we're finally making progress. How far back can you remember? I ask. She stops shaking and stares up at me. Her mouth opens, then closes. She's afraid to answer. I step closer, my heart beating uncharacteristically fast. I feel as if I'm on the edge of a discovery. Answer the question, I say. Her hands grip her sides and she drops her eyes as if embarrassed. Fine. All the way back. My birth, and even before that. Happy? I'm never happy, but I'm at least satisfied she's finally admitting to her Neff traits. Our memories are vast and clear from the moment our souls entered our bodies. Now for the important part. I step closer. Who is your father? I've never seen a Duke's badge of that colour, dark yellow amber, and I definitely haven't seen white. That's an angelic colour. Her jaw quivers. I don't know. I was adopted. Bollocks, I say through gritted teeth. You must have some idea. I raise my arm so that my hand with the pill is above the water. She gasps and raises her hands in horror as if I'm threatening to drop a baby. There was this one man, she says. Finally, some bleeding answers. I remember him from the day I was born. Jonathan LeGray. He's in prison now. Holy shit. Yes, of course. I'd completely forgotten about the Duke in prison, as I've never met him. The Duke of substance abuse, addiction, hence Anna's desire for more of the drug. I should have guessed from your behaviour tonight. She closes her eyes and I stare at her. She knows she is different. From the way she's shaking and battling this drug lust, I can only guess this isn't something she deals with often. As if she's never been trained. But of course, if her father's been in prison... But wouldn't he have gotten someone else to train her? Neff are taught to control themselves, not lose themselves to their sins this way. Anna sticks out her hand. My pill? Her face is pale and drained. There's no way I'm giving it to her. If her reaction is this bad coming down from the first pill, it will be worse after the second. You mean this one?
I ask. I know I'm cruel, but she comes across far too kind. I want to force her claws out.
Sorry, love. Just an aspirin,
I lie. I toss the pill into the water with a plunk.
No!
She damn near dives in after the stupid pill, and I grab her by the arms. I need to calm her before she does something stupid. How long ago did he give you the pill? I continue holding her tightly.
What?
Her eyes dart around as she tries to focus.
I don't know, maybe 40 minutes?
It should be out of your system very soon. You'll be fine. Just sit here and try to calm yourself. When I let her go, she sits obediently and grabs around her knees, burying her face and rocking back and forth stiffly. She looks tiny, balled up like that, and her long straight hair lifts and blows in the wind. A foreign tug of sympathy invades, and I look away from her. I want to believe her, but I'm still wary. I don't want to be entrapped by the mystery surrounding her. I can't afford to care. I sit down on the edge of the dock while she rides it out and sobers up. After 10 minutes, she scoots closer to me, watching my face with a newfound carefulness. Her colours are back, grey and orange. Why did it come and go so fast? She asks. I'm happy she's worked up the nerve to open up and ask me something while she's sober. Our bodies fight anything foreign. Germs, cancer, disease, the whole lot. Drugs and alcohol burn through quickly, hardly worth the effort. I tried smoking. Spent days coughing up black tar.
That's attractive, she says, brushing something invisible off her knee.
I snort with the irony of her comment.
Precisely. Can't afford to be unattractive.
So, she's still being careful. Are you like me?
Yes and no, it seems.
Her head cocks to the side as she's observing me, as if I'm the one who needs to be figured out. I want to ask her so much, but I don't. There's still a quiet, untrusting voice in my head warning me away from acting too interested. Neff are not supposed to give a damn about other Neff, or anyone, for that matter. In fact, we've probably spent enough time together tonight. I push my hearing up to the house to see if Raj is looking for me, but he's not. He's out in the car smoking a joint with Rocker Girl, no doubt after taking his hit of X as well. He better take it easy, or he's likely to show Rocker Girl a poor backseat performance. Tut, tut. Why don't you have one of those cloud thingies around you? Anna asks. She's eyeing the air around me, and I shake my head. What on earth is she talking about? Then I realize she must have just turned 16 and gained the ability to see guardian angels.
Cloud thingies? I sputter. You can't be serious.
Surely she knows that humans have guardian angels. That is the most basic of Neff basics. As I'm pulling my hearing in, I stumble upon a scuffle inside the house, shouting. Do you know what I'm talking about? She sits up straighter and looks like she might grab at my shirt. You do, don't you? Inside the house, Jay and Scott are fighting. Seems as though Jay is drunk and defending Anna's honor. Brilliant. I stand up asking, are your senses back now? She opens her mouth, clearly wanting to know more about the cloud thingies, but I've thrown her off and she blinks.
I think so, she says.
There's a fight in the house. I think you'd better listen. She stands up and closes her eyes, looking pained as she strains to hear. Then her eyes pop open.
Oh my gosh, Scott and Jay?
Yep. Jay just landed a nice sounding crunch and Scott is howling. Anna takes off running and I watch her go. She's got nice form and a great arse. And she's still a possible enemy, although it's taking more and more effort to convince myself of that. If this girl has been sent by the Dukes to test me, I cannot let myself be reeled in by her spectacular acts. I take my time walking back up to the house and going in. I listen, further baffled, as Anna diffuses the situation and gets the drunken Jay to her car. She cares for him with patience and tenderness. The only Neff I've ever seen act like that is the twin Marna, but she's only like that with the few of us Neff who are her friends, never with humans. I stand in the nearly empty kitchen. Everyone has made a mass exodus to the front of the house for the fight. As people filter back in, I hear Anna whisper something in her car, seemingly to herself.
I'm not finished with you, Cardin Row.
It's like a puppy threatening a cobra. A grin flashes across my face and I quickly wipe it away before saying to the air,
likewise.
2 seconds later, Rocker Girl is standing in front of me with her hands on her hips, looking unamused.
Uh-oh, I say. Has Raj overindulged?
Her eyes narrow in annoyance.
He says his hands weigh 1,000 pounds and he can't lift them.
We stare at each other for 2 beats, and then we burst into laughter. Rocker Girl covers her mouth until her mirth subsides. I twist the strands of her pink hair in my fingers, and she looks up at me with a tough face, pretending she never showed that moment of humour. Then I lean down and whisper into her ear,
"You're fucking sexy when you laugh, Mandy."
I'm not sure if it's my words or my breath against her skin that makes her shiver. She hooks her fingers into the belt loops of my black jeans and looks up at me.
"What's your name, anyway?" she asks.
"Cardin Row." Her mouth drops open and she bats her eyes.
"Shit. Wow. I totally didn't put 2 and 2 together when Raj said he was in the band. You're the drummer. Kai."
I nod. Her fingers tighten on my loops and she pulls me closer.
"Your reputation precedes you."
"Oh, yeah.
And what reputation is that?"
I slowly back her against the counter amidst all the people. Her voice goes even huskier.
"I've heard you're a very, very bad boy."
I shrug. "Good? Bad?
It's all subjective, right?"
I grind my hips against hers and her eyes flutter back. I lean down to her ear.
"You have 2 choices. There's a room upstairs or the empty boathouse."
"Boathouse all the way," she says breathlessly.
I take her hand and say nothing more, but as I'm opening the back door to the deck, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. A dark whisperer swoops in and snarls with glee at the partygoers. I tense for 1/2 second, glad Anna is away from the party now. When the demon spirit flies my way, I acknowledge the savage being with a nod, hoping it will leave off, but it doesn't. It cackles and dives toward Mandy, whispering harshly in her ear as her guardian angel pushes and fights it. She's unaware she's being whispered to, but her aura darkens and I squeeze her hand. A pit opens in my gut at the thought that I'm on the same team as that evil thing. It finally leaves off and I pull Mandy outside. She looks away from me purposefully and reaches across to scratch her wrist. In the porch light, I see the silvery reflection of scars up her arm. Cut marks. Fucking whisperers. I won't ask about those lines, nor will I stick around to chat about it afterward. But tonight, I'll try to take her mind off it, even for a moment. What happens afterward is up to her. Chapter 4. Meeting Daddy Dearest. You're way too young to play these games, but you better start, but you better start. I'm Not the One by 303. Anna has me turned completely around, arse about face. It's been days since I saw her, and I feel as if I will not be able to tell up from down until I figure out if she's for real. Am I naive to think she's genuine? I cannot figure out why she would lie about not knowing her heritage, other than to entrap me for the Duke's dark purposes, to question my loyalty. While I'm out of Father's hearing range, I call Blake, the son of Duke Malcolm, Demon of Envy. "Ever heard of a neph called Anna, daughter of Belial?"
"Huh?" he asks. "He's substance abuse, right? I don't think he has any kids."
"Yeah," I say. "Neither did I."
"What's going on, brah?"
I shake my head.
"Nothing. Take care, mate."
I know I roused his curiosity, but it can't be helped. I have trust in Blake, a rarity among our kind, but I can't say too much over the telephone. The first knock comes from upstairs. My bandmates are spot on for our practice time. I hear the door open and voices spill down the halls and stairs, feet tromp down to my basement where I sit at the drums ready to go, ready to clear my head. A group of girls comes down behind the guys, laughing and smelling of perfumes and hairspray. Raj and I bump fists and Bennett slaps my palm before turning on the keyboard. There's enough hair product between Michael, Raj and Bennett to keep the gel companies in business forever. I sometimes wear an earpiece at large gigs, but in my basement, I have to wear headphones to keep the sounds from echoing. It's a relief to put them on, do our sound checks and get started. We rock out for nearly 2 hours. I'm refreshed and tired in the best way. The only thing I need to top off this feeling is a bit of soft skin against mine. I lock eyes with a redhead in a miniskirt who I hooked up with months ago. We haven't had sex yet, though, and I plan to remedy that. I give her a nod. Poof goes her aura, as red as my shirt. I'm so in. I jerk my head to the side and she gives me a smirk like only hot girls can do. She comes to stand between my legs, eyeing me sexily. Oh, so you're going to give me the time of day now? She tries for nonchalance in her voice, but her colours are screaming like a fireworks display. What are you on about, babe? I haven't seen you in ages. I've been at, like, a ton of gigs since that night. I widen my eyes as if surprised and lazily push the curls off her shoulders with the back of my hand, touching her bare skin. You should have come backstage.
See ya, Kai, Raj calls.
I raise my chin to say bye to the guys as they leave with a bunch of girls. One chick stays behind, the redhead's friend. She sits in an oversized chair, texting.
They wouldn't let me backstage. I tried and tried to catch your eye, and I've called you.
Ah, my stupid phone, I say. I widen my knees and take her by the waist, pulling her closer. But before we get started, I scan the property with my hearing. The voices I catch in a car outside make me freeze.
Want me to come with you?
It might be better if I talk to him alone.
That's cool. There's this instrument store.
Anna is here.
Jay's brought her. She's come for me.
I somehow know this is the moment of truth where she will finally show her true self. I have to be ready because there's a huge part of me that will be disappointed if she's an enemy. I steel myself against it and prepare myself for the worst.
I quickly stand and drop my hands from the red-headed girl, backing away. Her eyes flash with shock.
Bugger. I do not have time to deal with angry girls.
Look, I'm sorry, but I need to work on these songs a few more times by myself. I'll give you a ring to hang out later, all right then?
Are you serious?
I'll let you show yourselves out.
Her friend is staring at me, mouth dangling open to show the chewing gum inside.
Yeah, I'm a prick. Don't care. They need to go now.
Redhead lets out an angry growling sound and proceeds to gather her belongings and stomp off. Her friend glares at me before they finally leave. I put my headphones back on and force myself to relax. This Neff will not beat me. If the Dukes think they can send a tiny beautiful actress to throw me off my game, they are mistaken. I release my crazed anxieties on the drums but keep her in my peripheral vision when she enters the basement. She gently closes the door and looks around the room in awe before her stare lands on me. As she watches, a cloud of lust practically glows in red around her, and it makes me play harder. Call me moody, but if I'm expecting a shag and it falls through because a possible enemy decides to show, it puts me on edge, especially when this possible enemy is hot for me and I refuse to touch her. I've never had such ambiguous feelings for someone. I'm a paranoid, confused mess, and that irks the bejesus out of me. Enough of this. The game ends now. I slam the final beats and then stand, throwing down my headphones.
Well, if it isn't Little Orphan Annie,
I say. A hurt look crosses her face. A navy sadness slices through her aura. I refuse to feel bad. I get myself a drink and decide to call her out. Take this to the next level. I take out my knife, open it, twirl it, all the while watching her fear and confusion. I want her to speak, but she doesn't. So I move closer, get right in her face, cage her in against the wall. Now she's the one feeling ambiguous, torn between lust and fear. I keep my knife steady in my hand, out at my side where she can see it. I am primed and ready for a fight, expecting her to reveal secret ninja skills at any moment, but she doesn't. She merely melts back against the wall.
What do you want?
I ask.
I just want to talk. You don't have to try to scare me.
Her voice shakes, The darkness of her fear is overridden by a puff of red as my hips graze against hers. There's hardly any room for fear when you're so bloody turned on.